Shoot. Psht. See. S. You guessed it. There are countless ways to say shh in different cultures, but in all my time as a librarian, I've never uttered it once. So then, where does the stereotype come from? And what exactly is a library? It might seem like a silly question. After all, we know, right? Stately building, books, quiet, a four-eyed librarian overseeing the premises with a hawk eye. Well, the stereotype is probably rooted in the library of decades past, where four walls filled with books led to a more rigid definition of library. And popular depictions like the uptight Marion the librarian surely didn't help.
Would you please make your selection and leave?
I have.
What do you want to take out?
The librarian.
Shh. Quiet, please.
But guess what? That's definitely not how I define a library. But before I set the record straight, let me introduce myself. My name is Candace Watkins, and I'm a librarian. I work and live in beautiful Astoria, Oregon, at Clatsop Community College Library. And yes, like a large percentage of the population, I do wear glasses. And yes, I like to read. And while not exactly stately, I do work in a nice big building full of books overlooking the Columbia River. So, okay, sure, I guess you can say that in some ways I fit the stereotype. The bottom line, though, is that the librarian stereotype is dangerous. It covers up the real role of librarians. The librarians that I know don't fit the stereotype of the staid gatekeepers of information, the guardians of a sanctuary of quiet. They are out and about in the community, with a finger on the pulse of technology trends, literacy, critical thinking, and access. So what's my point here? We all love libraries, right? Our community is planning a renovation of the Astor Public Library, which has the potential to be a gem in downtown Astoria. But while this is happening, school librarians are disappearing at a time in which we need them most. Did you know that there are no more full-time licensed school librarians left in the K-12 system of Clatsop County? Not one. Why? Is it because they're not recognized as teachers or leaders of technology? My goal here is to say, hey, let's ditch the lame stereotype and wake up to what libraries and librarians really bring to schools and communities. Librarians don't sit inside the library all day stamping books. They are teachers in our schools. They are incubators for small businesses. They create makerspaces, providing access and education to innovative technologies. The list goes on. But don't listen to me. Listen to your neighbors tell you about libraries and what they mean to them. They say it all. Just listen. One of the most touching testaments that I received came from a young man named Isaiah Moore. Isaiah was recently an inmate at the Oregon Youth Authority in Warrenton, Oregon. His essay is a statement on the power of reading, on how words can transform lives during and at different moments in life. Isaiah was very shy in his reading. I could feel the burden of his current situation in his voice. His words, though, are quite hopeful.
When I was little, I had my mom read me bedtime stories. As I got older, I learned how to read and I liked to order books from a thing called a book order. I always looked forward to getting the book orders every month. I would go home and do extra chores so I could get my allowance to buy a book. The books I would get were books about sharks, which was my favorite animal, dragons, Pokemon books, how to draw cars, and the Diary of a Wimpy Kid books. I loved to get new books so I could have my mom read them to me and help me to learn to read. I liked to get drawing books so I could learn to draw, and I would give them to my dad when he came home from work and he'd hang them up on the refrigerator. I remembered working hard to clean the house so my parents would take me to the book fair. The book fair is where you go to your school, and in the library they have tons of new books for sale. It was like a second Christmas for me. A library to me is a magical place. Books are life movies, but with words. It's cool because there are a lot of different books that fit what you like, whether it be fantasy, romance, comedy, comics, short stories, picture books, magazines, science fiction, fiction, nonfiction, etc. I personally like a little of everything. Right now I'm reading a book series about vampires, and they're good books and I can't put them down. But as I grew older, I started hanging out with my friends. The more I hung out with my friends, I started to forget about books and stopped reading them. Little did I know, it was the wrong type of friends to have. I got into some bad habits that led me to getting arrested multiple times. I was smoking weed and not listening to my parents. I was also skipping school to smoke weed, which affected my grades a lot. Then I started to steal things. I was stealing from stores and getting caught, so I started to break into houses and steal their stuff. I was caught stealing someone's things from their house, which got me nowhere. Now I'm locked up and there is not much to do but read. But I don't care because I forgot how cool it was to read. Now I read every day. I even stay up late to read. We have library twice a week and it seems to be the only thing I look forward to, especially because we have such a cool librarian that does so much for us. She orders us new books, so we are always reading. We give her our book requests and she orders them. I never thought that reading would mean so much to me in my life. Now I plan on turning my life around so I could be with my family and hopefully share my passion of reading with my brothers. I will never stop reading.
Isaiah mentions his cool librarian. Her name is Kathy Merritt, and she's a certified school librarian. While no longer employed by the Warrenton School District, Kathy works 10 hours a week at the Youth Authority. While that doesn't seem like a lot, that's an improvement. Previously, the library had been run by volunteers. Kathy, though, has revitalized it, adding books and other resources that the kids really want and need. She has the training and teaching experience to understand how to connect with these kids and understand their literacy levels and needs. Her impact is evident on kids like Isaiah. Isaiah has tremendous untapped potential. He's very literate and a good writer. He's got, as I told him, chops, or a knack to write and express himself. But he needs to believe in himself, most of all. And he also needs people like Kathy in his life to support him along the way. Which leads me to a trio of other young people. Eli Hirsch, Rachel Speakman, and Abby Thornton, all students at Astoria High School. I'll admit that I openly played a bit of trickery when I interviewed each. I knew that if I told them I was a librarian, that would probably influence their answers to my questions. So, on some good advice from a colleague, I played it cool. My colleague is Donna Lanklos, an anthropologist or library ethnographer employed by the J. Murray Atkins Library at the University of North Carolina in Charlotte. She studies how people seek and use information. Sounds like what a librarian does, right? But she does it from an anthropological perspective. She allowed me to use some questions that she uses directly in her research projects. The questions come from her Visitors and Residents project. On her coaching, I told our young trio of students that I was merely an instructor interested in literacy and research. They seemed okay with that, with the knowledge that I would reveal my true identity after the interview. Let me preface this by saying that all three of these young folks, Eli, Rachel, and Abby, were a pleasure to interview. They were courteous, articulate, and smart. And while they were all very different, their answers to my questions revealed some striking similarities. Let's start first with Eli. He was by far the biggest techie of the group.
I'm Eli Hirsch. I'm 16 and I'm a sophomore at Asteroid High. I'm on social media a lot, and only really Facebook. I don't like a lot of the other ones, but I also have a few online games I play. Then in terms of technology, I am participating in a robotics club down at Seaside, so and starting to learn how to program.
When you think about technology and all the stuff that you use, is there anything that you couldn't live without?
I'd have to say either my iPhone or my iPad, because laptop's great, but I can do almost everything I can do on my laptop on my iPhone, and it's easier to carry around.
Surprisingly, neither Abby nor Rachel use technology that much. In an age in which most teens' eyeballs are suctioned to some type of device and their egos enmeshed with social networking, both of these girls had a refreshing separation from technology. Rachel even had some keen and spot-on insights into her peers' usage of the internet and social networking.
Rachel Speakman, I go to Astoria High School and I'm 17. Well, I've stuck with the primarily just like a flip text, you know, phone for since my freshman year. So I've kind of avoided getting a smartphone, and I don't really want the technology necessarily because I see what it does to a lot of my friends. Like, I hardly talk to my friends at lunch anymore because they're always on their phones, and it kind of irritates me a little bit. And I feel like if I had a smartphone, I would be using, you know, things like Twitter or Facebook or, you know, Instagram a lot more than I normally would, and be taking me away from what's really going on. So.
Is there anything else that bothers you about being online?
I have to really think it. Well, people, I mean, I was actually just talking about this with one of my teachers, that it creates like an individualized reality for people. In a sense, I mean, I feel like that people can choose what kind of reality they want to live in and create their own like little safety bubble, where I don't really believe in that. I mean, I feel like that I'm more of like a global view sort of person. I don't know how to describe it, but I don't really want to live in a restricted, you know, bubble like this. I've had issues with friends plagiarizing papers. It's actually, I was just having a conversation with my friend today about that because her teacher called her and said that I can't accept this paper because it's plagiarized. And so we had a conversation about it, and I mean, I think because that's our, you know, my main source of you referring, you know, for information, that copying and pasting something into a paper is the easiest thing to do for a lot of people. So,
and a lot of times, you know, what I wonder is, in high school, is it part of your instruction, and do your teachers talk about how to avoid that?
Well, it's more like a mentioning sort of thing. Like, don't plagiarize. You know, I won't accept your paper. Or, you will get in trouble for this. But it's not like how to reward anything or how to take someone else's idea and make it your own. Like, none of my teachers really go over that.
Which is, it sounds like that's what is needed.
Yeah, it would help.
Do your teachers in your classes now, do they have you use library resources?
Rarely, actually. Very rarely. Like, they'll give us printout packets of certain things, but for a lot of my, I mean, I think one class I have a textbook and that's it.
So are there certain kinds of things that your instructors want you to do when you're looking for information?
Not particularly. We don't actually get a whole lot of instruction on, you know, the matter of researching things or, you know, finding information. That's just kind of like, you know, kind of do it on your own and, you know, learn through experience sort of situation, where I feel like the teachers need to, you know, kind of give us a little more headway on, or a little more advice on how to find things and, you know, where to go.
If you had a magic wand, what would your ideal way of getting information be? If you could create any, you know, ideal system for finding and retrieving information, what would it look like?
Well, if I could have a wise man like Buddha sitting here, then that would be the best thing. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know. There's just so much bogus information out there that, I mean, really misleads a lot of people. And on, like, when I'm trying to have an argument with someone over, like, something, then I mean, I feel like that people come off from a lot of different ways and pulling up information that isn't necessarily, you know, true or the best information.
So it sounds like to me, if you could change anything and wave your magic wand, it wouldn't necessarily be the technology. It might be the education about how to use technology.
Yeah, definitely. I think that would be good. I mean, they're incorporating it into our school a little more. Like, we have netbooks and, you know, everybody can, you know, we all have access to computers, but, and we all have some, I mean, a lot of my friends have smartphones. So I just don't think that people are really using it the way they should. I mean, to the best of their ability.
Rachel and Eli obviously use technology very differently. But as Rachel points out, the technology really isn't the issue. A school can provide iPads or laptops to all students. That's great. But it doesn't address how that technology is used. The glaring similarity in all of the student interviews is the stated need for education. Education and how to find and use information critically. Even these smart kids stated pretty blatantly that their education in these areas has been fairly minimal. Mostly, they figure things out for themselves through trial and error or through guidance from instructors when the time allows. And this is where the missing link comes back into the conversation. If school librarians teach these skills, referred commonly to as information literacy, and this education is so needed by our students, where have all the librarians gone? Good question. Just to give you a picture of the situation, data collected by the Oregon State Library in Salem shows that the number of certified school librarians in Oregon has dropped dramatically since 1980, from 818 to only 144 in 2013. That's an 82% reduction. And the number of students per librarian? In 1980, there was one librarian per 547 students, compared with almost 4,000 students per librarian in 2013. That's a shocking difference. The common and off-base justification for this reduction is that with the internet, who needs librarians? Especially with tight budgets, they're expendable, right? Well, actually, the impact that school librarians have on learning has been well documented in numerous studies over the years. But how do they impact learning, and by how much, you ask? A recent study in Pennsylvania K-12 schools found that there's no substitute for a full-time, licensed school librarian who's fully engaged in the teaching and learning process. Key findings include consistently, reading scores are better for elementary, middle, and high school students. The proportional difference in advanced reading scores associated with a full-time librarian grows from elementary to middle to high school. And on average, the percentage of students scoring advanced in writing is 2.5 times higher for schools with a full-time certified librarian than those without one. But again, you want to hear the voices from our community, right? To drive home these points, listen to Jessica West. She's a language arts teacher at Warrenton High School. I realized when speaking with her that she's a dynamo of a teacher, a master of her discipline, and especially the teaching of it to high school students. That said, she's clearly overwhelmed by the great need in students for information literacy education. Exactly what Rachel Speakman, our high school student, referred to earlier. I talked with Jessica both about her teaching of college-level writing courses within the high school, Writing 121 and Writing 122, and her teaching to high school students in general. Would she and her students benefit from the support and expertise of a full-time school librarian? You bet. Let's listen.
So I certainly have not had anyone else come in and try to work with supporting me within any capacity, even our school librarian here, who's not technically a librarian. She was in the process of getting certified, and then it kind of fell to the wayside because it's not her passion. She has no time in there, and as a matter of fact now, even her library periods, she has students in there that she's working with. So that piece is gone. So in thinking about how I'm going to bring sources into the classroom for the 122 kids, it's only from my perspective. I try to work, of course, with information literacy and building that, but it becomes so minimalized because my focus isn't just
the information literacy. It's what they're doing with those sources, how they're applying the sources, how they're analyzing the sources, integrating them. So that's where my focus should be as a writing instructor, and I'm still trying to give them these little bones. So, for example, we worked on last week looking at bias in the news. How do you identify when a source is going to be more liberal or more conservative? How can you identify words within there? How are they framing the story? What's omitted? And they'd never done anything like that before. What do you mean that it's like this or like that? Now, I had all of the kids as sophomores. We certainly don't touch on that, you know, within regular English 2 classroom. And then all of a sudden I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is something that they should really be thinking about. This is huge, especially when they're able to take from anywhere on the web. And we certainly have had the conversation, what's academically credible, what's not. But there are different levels of academically credible sources in different places you would want to be going to. And that is something that certainly has not been given enough time at all.
That evaluation piece is so central to information literacy. I mean, that's something that, I mean, the students that get to the college, and I go into a lot of different classes. And some classes I'll just do, you know, a tiny bit. And then some classes I have much more in-depth relationships with. But the good thing about having a small college is that I can reach a lot of people. And I talk about that evaluation aspect a lot, so much so that they get really sick of hearing it, which is good.
That is good.
In a way.
That means it's sunk in.
at least a little bit. But although the deeper evaluation can go really deep, and like you're saying, with so much information out there, there's so many different layers of evaluation that you have to look at. And that's the opportunity, I think, with a Writing 122 class, is to really get into those layers of evaluation, which is key. So as far as, like, evaluation goes, how do students usually evaluate information at the high school level?
Basically, they simply look for somebody to directly support or refute what they're saying. So they're not looking for sources to add to the academic conversation, to hear more voices, more opinions. They are just looking for the information that they want, as opposed to being open to receiving information and then changing your opinions about things or supporting things in a different way. When they encounter things like that, even if they're intrigued, it feels a little unsafe to them. They're not quite sure how to work with these brand new ideas that they hadn't considered before, and it becomes too hard. So then those pieces just get dropped to the side, and then that becomes part of the discussion, but doesn't actually end up entering into the writing. If you've only read the first paragraph, then how much do you really know about your source? And I do think that with such a glut of information out there, it is very easy for kids to just to pinpoint exactly what they want and to ignore everything else. But especially when you're a high school student, at what level of the conversation are you able to step into the room with? You're only going to know the most, you know, salient points. And beyond that, those subtle nuances, especially when you're talking about argumentative and persuasive writing, I mean, come on, those are the pieces that make it. And so when you just simplify everything down, looking for that, you know, quick Google answer, Wikipedia response, it becomes difficult. Now, something that I ended up doing, I was actually so disappointed with a lot of the work that they'd done in 121 with looking at sources and beginning to integrate those pieces, that for their last assignment in there, I said, look, this isn't working. I'm giving you the sources now, and we're all going to write on the same topic. So we'd spent all of 122, okay, we're in whatever rhetorical mode, and you choose a topic to write about. I'm indifferent to what it is that you'd like to explore in your narrative, in your process analysis, in your whatever. But because they hadn't worked with sources in quite the way that I wanted them to, for the last piece that we did, we worked looking at, it was a cause and effect essay, so looking at the dropout crisis in America. And I brought them the sources. And I have them complete a self-evaluation for every essay that they write, and they always discuss their use of sources, how they felt, how strong was it, how much information did they get. Consistently, students were telling me that they felt that this was the strongest use of sources. And then I'm thinking, well, I gave them all to you. So I went through the process of filtering through hundreds of articles and then deciding which is most academically appropriate, which is going to bring them to different ideas.
So you did the work for them?
I did the work for them.
And that's really interesting because when I interviewed the students, I was asking them, okay, so how do you find information for your assignments and stuff? Do you receive instruction for searching, for evaluating? And a lot of them said, well, you know, generally our instructors give us the sources that they want us to use. Mm-hmm. And I found that really interesting. And part what I'm hearing is that because they haven't had the step-by-step building blocks and the recursive learning and finding, accessing, and evaluating information, then you get to a certain point with where, wham, you're in a Writing 122 class, and you don't have the building blocks to really be able to do it.
I think it mostly has to do with the repetition of that skill. So if I ask myself, why can I do that? Well, I've been through a bachelor's degree. I've been through a master's degree. I have written and written and written and written. So I'm a veteran at that. But for them, I mean, they get very sporadic lessons. If I think about things in my English 2 class, we touch on research twice. I've broken, as far as a large research, a focused unit of research, as opposed to just find out one piece.
That's as a sophomore class?
That's as a sophomore.
Okay.
And over the years, I've figured out that you can't give them everything at once. You can't make them do the research and do the writing piece at the same time. So I've split it in half. They only practice finding sources within 10th grade, so you're talking 15, 16-year-olds, one time a year. As far as a gigantic, big process of looking at how do I find information, I taught them how to use a database. They'd never seen a database before. So, EBSCOhost, how do I use this thing? What are all these different pieces? How do I specify my searches to be as limited as possible so I can actually get back worthwhile information? And not just worthwhile information, but what's also accessible to them because they're at a much lower reading level than a lot of the material that's provided on EBSCOhost, for example.
You cover information literacy pretty well in the writing in English. I mean, you would like to have, I guess, more comprehensive time to more comprehensively cover it, or maybe even a librarian to help, you know, collaborate maybe on some stuff. That would be great. I think the value of, I mean, thinking what I do at the college and how I collaborate with instructors, it's all over the place. It's, you know, my deepest collaborations are with the nursing department, with biology courses, with speech and courses, and I work with the writing instructors, but much more minimally than I do with the rest of the curriculum, because the need for it is so much greater in the rest of the curriculum, I think.
Well, I think that is, too, because of the level that they're asking you to access information. Then it's content embedded. And when you have to find nursing information that's content embedded, that becomes a whole different arena of how do I even begin to look at this, because that's something that they have never touched on within a high school class. I've never said, hey, we're going to look at this piece of, you know, this issue, this topic, and see what kind of sources are available to study whatever field it is that you'd like to study. I mean, that never comes into play. So everything stays at the very general level. You don't get to that specificity that you do in a nursing course or in the biology course.
So it's much more of a comprehensive need for addressing information literacy and across the high school curriculum than just solely in the writing courses that you see. And that is actually in the Common Core standards too. I mean, all of it is. So we're not getting there.
But the Common Core standards are very lofty and idealistic, and they do not take into account what your average 14, 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old thinks like, looks like, acts like, understands their world. It's two different universes, and next year is the implementation year. Next year is when the new testing comes out for the state, and it's going to be a bloodbath. It's going to be. And I think that there's going to be a lot of pushback from teachers who, even if they have the best of intentions of wanting to integrate these things, we are spread so thin as a whole, there's just no way. So if you are a 33-year-old woman like I am, you're young and you've had exposure to growing up in the internet age, I mean, I don't think that I ever have done research solely from books ever once, you know, that I could think of. Certainly not at the college level. Maybe high school, I remember working with oh my gosh, I don't even remember what they're called anymore. So if you did not grow up in the database age, you're going to be extremely reluctant to teaching your students how to use a technology that you yourself don't feel comfortable using. Especially thinking about what access do most of our kids have to computers, have to technology. It's extremely limited. They might have the internet at home, but they have the internet at home when mom and dad aren't using the internet at home. They've never written an essay, and why do their mom and why would their mother or father have, you know, office sort of suite material on there if that's not their background, which the majority of people in this school are not coming from there.
Remember, the physical space of a library and its resources can be stellar. The library assistants inside can be welcoming and superlative in their service. But if there's no licensed librarian in the classroom working with teachers and students, those resources won't be used. Abby Thornton sums it up well. When asked to recall the last time she was required to use library resources for a class, she paused and replied,
I think the last time I was asked to use a library was like in the third grade, maybe.
As money trickles back to our schools with an improving economy, we need to remind our school districts to bring back our school librarians. Otherwise, our kids will have a huge missing link in their education that will follow them throughout their lives. Let's have Abby bring us home one more time. I asked her to wave her magic wand to create her ideal information retrieval system. What would it look like?
To just know everything in my mind.
Well, we haven't quite evolved to that point yet, so we need to take steps to bring back the element to our schools that teaches and empowers our children to tackle and use this ever-expanding world of information. Our school librarians are key. Let's work together to bring them back. Thanks for listening, and join me next week for more great essays and interviews about libraries and librarians in your community. See you then!